enough council members here that we have to do that. So what I have to do is call this special meeting of the Castle Valley Town Council to order at 7:01 and turn it over to Division of Water Rights. There's a bunch of people here from Water Rights, and they're going to give you a presentation, starting with the state water engineer, Jerry Olds, here. And be nice to them.
I'm glad you added that line. There are a couple more chairs up here for you that are standing. We appreciate the opportunity of being here. We understand there's quite a bit of interest in water down here, and so that's what we're down here to talk about. Let me just lay the ground rules, and then I'd like to introduce some staff as well. This is a meeting to provide you with some information. We are not saying this is the only meeting we will hold. There's a lot of stuff we're going to throw at you tonight, and I have to admit I'm a little concerned that we may try to give you too much, but we're going to try it and see how it goes. If we need to come back, we'll do that. As we go through the discussions, feel free to ask questions to clarify things, but don't ask us questions about your specific situation or we'll get sidetracked and won't get through it. We will leave adequate time at the end for questions and answers. Okay? By way of introduction, I'm Jerry Olds. I serve as a state engineer. Let me introduce the staff that are here with me. Mark Stilson is the new regional engineer in the Southeast region. He took Mark Page's place, that many of you have probably worked with throughout the many years. David Horsley is the new assistant regional engineer in Price. Raise your hand there so they can see who you are. Okay. So these two gentlemen are new to our office, but great additions. I think you'll enjoy working with them over the years. And then Rick Weil is also in our Price office. Rick will be taking part on the program this evening. And then Teresa Wilhelmson is our adjudication manager. She heads up the adjudication team within our division, and she'll be making a presentation as well. Let's see, are you able to see that? Can we turn down part of the lights?
Yeah. And folks, there are some seats down front. There's some room over here rather than have people crowded in the hallway. Sorry, Jerry. And there are two empty seats up front if you want to be in one of the hot seats.
Okay, here we have a real cool picture of Castle Valley that shows the valley. So that's what we're here to discuss is water right issues in Castle Valley.
It was working a second ago.
Okay, as far as the agenda, I'll lead off. As you can appreciate by this picture, water rights tends to be a little emotional. But let's try not to get that kind of brotherly love here tonight. I've used this picture in a number of discussions throughout the years. The question always is which one of those is the state engineer? It depends on the conference that you're at. If it's a bunch of attorneys, they say it's the one in the middle, the black one. Okay, I'm just going to discuss some basic background information, and then after that, we'll have Rick Wild talk about the water rights process. There's been a number of questions that people have asked about that, and then we'll have Teresa talk about the adjudication process and what our plans are and so forth. To begin with, I'd like to just talk about some background information, make sure we're all talking from the same page. If you look at Utah water law, it is based on the doctrine of prior appropriation. Where did that come from? How did it originate? When the early pioneers came into Utah, as well as the settlers in California, one of the first things they realized was that water was going to be the limiting factor in settling the West. They realized that right off. And as a result of that, they adopted the principle that first in time was first in right. Now, at this same time in the mid-1800s, the United States of America acquired the lands here in the West. They were struggling to take control of that. As you read your history, yeah, that when the Mormon pioneers came into Salt Lake Valley, it was actually part of Mexico, and eventually became part of the United States. But it was such a vast country, the United States could not take control of it and manage it. As a result, the United States acquiesced to the local customs, as well as the laws of the territories and the states in the western United States when it came to administering water. And as a result of that, water rights in the West are administered under state government. What are the major elements of the appropriation doctrine? First of all, you have to take control of the water, divert it from its source, and place it to a beneficial use. The priority date associated with that water right is very important. That date is generally the date that you first put the water to beneficial use, or now under the application process, the date you file the application. But it is very important when it comes to times of shortage. When there is not adequate water in a source to satisfy all of the water rights, then the priority kicks in, and first in time, first in right. Also, there are provisions under the appropriation doctrine where you can lose a water right. That is either by forfeiture or abandonment. We'll talk about those a little bit more in detail. Okay, some basic definitions. What is a water right? Who owns the water within the state of Utah? The public actually owns the water. A water right, then, is just a right to the beneficial use of that water under certain terms and conditions that are laid out in the water right document itself. Beneficial use, you hear that a lot with regards to water. In Utah water law, it says the basis, the measure, and the limit to all rights to the use of water in this state are limited by the beneficial use. Also, water is declared, or beneficial use is declared to be a public use. What does that mean? Well, the water has to provide some benefit to the individual as well as the public. And beneficial uses, although they're not defined within Utah statute, include such things as domestic stock watering, irrigation, industrial, municipal, mining, and so forth. Okay, an application. An application is just a request to create a water right or to modify a water right. Okay. Some other terms, acre foot. Again, we throw that around a lot just so that everyone is acquainted with that term. It's a unit of measurement, and under Utah statute, it's how we determine the volume or specify the volume. It's equal to 43,560 cubic feet, or 325,861 gallons. An acre foot is enough water to cover 1 acre of land, 1 foot deep. The other unit of measurement for water is cubic feet per second. That is the flow rate. And cubic feet per second is, in essence, 1 cubic foot every second at that flow rate. 1 cubic foot per second for 24 hours equals approximately 2 acre feet. So as you convert between those units. Okay, adjudication. That's a big $64,000 word. But really what it is it's just a judicial process in which the state engineer is a party to the action, whereby water rights are determined, recommendations submitted to the court, and then the court decrees what the water rights are within that particular drainage basin. It might be referred to as a quiet title of water, updating of water uses, those type of things. Okay, forfeiture. What is forfeiture? How is it defined? Forfeiture is a statutory term that is defined within our code, and it is set by statute as well. And that occurs whenever a water right has not been used for 5 consecutive years. Then it is subject to forfeiture. And so forfeiture is a specified time period. If you have a surface water right, and like in this part of the country, you have wet years and dry years, and in the dry years there's not water available to even divert, that doesn't count against you for the 5 consecutive years. The water has to be available there. For groundwater, where that water is available each and every year, then it would be the 5 consecutive years. Okay, abandonment. Abandonment is based upon the intent of the water user and does not take a specified period of time. If you had a water right and you decided, I do not want to use that anymore, and you walked away from it, it is considered to be abandoned at that time. It's based upon your intent. And so, in essence, it takes effect immediately. Okay, Castle Valley is located within the Upper Colorado River Basin of Utah. And some of the discussion tonight centers around Utah's entitlement to use water in the Colorado River Basin. And so I want to just touch on that briefly. I think this is some good information so that you understand some of the concerns that we have, some of the limitations that we're working under. Utah's right to use water from the Colorado River or its tributaries is controlled by interstate compacts, the Colorado River Compact of 1922, the Mexican Treaty between the United States and the country of Mexico, which was entered into in 1944, and then the Upper Colorado River Compact, which was entered into in 1948. In addition, there are a number of court cases, operating agreements, and other things that make up the law of the river. Utah's apportionment to the Colorado River is 23% of the water that is available to the upper basin states. Okay? That varies depending upon the period of time that you use to make the study and other assumptions. But the state of Utah officially uses the number of 1,369,000 acre feet per year of depletion from the Upper Colorado River Basin as air entitlement. Now, it's important that you understand the concept of depletion. That is water that's diverted and consumed. It's lost to the system. For example, with irrigation, generally, if it's flood irrigation, about half of the water percolates down through the soil mantle and is either recharged to the groundwater system or returned back to surface water streams. And so, again, air use is based on depletion. 2005, we estimated the depletion to be 1,007,500 acre feet. Okay. So if you do the math there, it says that we have 361,000 acre feet of depletion within the Upper Colorado River Basin that we are not using as of 2005. Okay. Quite a bit of water. Remember that number. It's going to be important as we go through the discussion. Now, as far as looking at the actual estimated depletions in 2005, 591,000 acre feet, these are thousands of acre feet units here, is used for agricultural purposes and stock watering. So irrigation, those types of uses. By far the largest amount of water in any one group. Municipal and domestic purposes depletes just over 25,000 acre feet a year. Power production, power plants, and industrial uses, just under 45,000 acre feet a year. Exports and imports into the basin. Exports would be the Central Utah Project, the Provo River Project, the Strawberry Project. There's a number of them in Carbon and Emery County that take water out. There's one import into the basin down from the Sevier River over into the Tropic area. But as we add and subtract all of those, we're depleting just under 207,000 acre feet per year. Then reservoir evaporation within the basin accounts for just over 19,000 acre feet per year. And then as part of the Colorado River Storage Project, we are assessed 23% of the storage on Lake Powell, Flaming Gorge, and the Blue Mesa systems in Colorado. Those total up to 120,000 acre feet per year. So the total depletion then, as I indicated earlier, in 2005 within Utah is the 1,007,000 acre feet per year. That's how we're actually using the water today. Now, next I would like to discuss with you the approved yet undeveloped applications that we have out in the basin. What we've done is list a number of the larger water rights that entities are holding, and then over here it shows the estimated depletion associated with those applications. San Juan County Water Conservancy District holds several water rights that are approved yet undeveloped, and we estimate the depletion from those would total about 30,000 acre feet a year. The Central Utah Water Conservancy District has a couple of applications as well. They will total about 29,500 acre feet a year. Then the Utah Board of Water Resources has an application for 158,000 acre feet of depletion. This is the old Flaming Gorge filing. Maybe some of you have heard about that. When the Bureau of Reclamation constructed Flaming Gorge Reservoir, there were two components to it. First of all, the reservoir and the power production. They have developed that and placed that water to use. Then there was what was referred to as the Ute Indian Unit, which proposed to take water out of Flaming Gorge Reservoir through a tunnel through the Uinta Mountains to the south slope of the Uinta Mountains and use it within the Uinta Basin for various purposes. That application had a potential depletion of about 160,000 acre feet. When the United States acknowledged they would not build that project, they kept a little bit of water for Dutch John and their uses associated with the facilities there at Flaming Gorge Dam. And then they conveyed the rest of that to the Board of Water Resources. And so that's where the 158,000 acre feet of depletion. The Board of Water Resources has since apportioned out that water to a number of entities up and down the river, both private as well as public agencies. They are still holding some of the water. The Lake Powell pipeline that you hear about, that will be supplied from water under this water act. Then the Wayne County Water Conservancy District has an application which we estimate will have about 50,000 acre feet of depletion. King County Water Conservancy District has a couple of applications for about 30,000. In San Pete County, this is the narrowest project on the headwaters of the Price River, would deplete about 5,600. Uinta County has a 5,000 acre foot application. And then we have a whole bunch of them that are less than 5,000. And we've totaled those up, and they come to about 80,000 acre feet a year. Then we have reached a tentative agreement with the Ute Indian Tribe as to their water right claims, and those will total about 105,000 acre feet of additional depletion within the system. Notice the total, 493,000 acre feet. How much did we have left that we're not using? 361. We've written a few more checks. One thing that you need to notice from this list, what's very apparent? Who holds the water rights? Is it public agencies or private people? They're all public agencies, aren't they? And there's a reason for that. The law as it's now written basically allows a municipality or a public water supply entity to hold a water right for the first 50 years and basically hold it for future needs. They do not have to demonstrate due diligence and so forth in developing that water.
Why isn't Grand County listed up there?
They're less than 5,000. They'd be in the 80 here. And Grand County has a couple of applications. There's a bunch of them in this 80. Okay. In addition, the Navajo Nation has water rights to their reservation. Those have not been quantified. We do not have an argument as to whether they have a water right. The question is, how much? Is it 50,000 acre feet a year of depletion? 100,000? 200,000? We don't know. But the state of Utah has taken the position that, yes, the Navajo Nation is entitled to water rights from the Colorado River system or its tributaries. And so we need to work with them to define whatever that is. If we assume it's 100,000 acre feet, then you've got to go back and add that on to the 491 that's already out there. And so you can see that we've got some issues to deal with there. In addition, we have a number of water rights that were filed and have been setting out there with no action on them. We refer to those as unapproved applications. About a year ago, we took action trying to find out what people wanted to do with those. We sent letters out to about 1,400 different people or entities. We got 55% response back, which is actually pretty good. Of those 55% who responded, three quarters of them still were interested in the application and would hope at some future date we might be able to consider their application. 25% of them said, no, we don't have any more interest. Go ahead and reject the application, get it off your records. And so we have been doing that to whittle those down. A lot of these applications were filed in the 60s, 1960s, and 1970s. There are some that go back as early as 1922. So they've been on the books for a long time. Then the other 45% who did not respond back, either the applicant, the company, is now defunct, their address wasn't any good, and so we've been working on those to deal with it. If you look at our Colorado River account, it's somewhat like a checking account. There's 360,000 acre feet that's not used, but we've written the checks already. They're out there. They just haven't been cashed. The question is, will they ever be cashed? I think there's some of those projects that I listed earlier that will never be built. How long do we allow those checks to be outstanding? Again, the present law allows the public entities to hold it for the future use for the first 50 years. After that, then they've got to demonstrate that they have an immediate need for the water. Some of those applications are approaching the 50-year time period. Do we need to reevaluate how we administer our account? One of the things that bothers me as state engineer, I am charged to use Utah's water resources to the maximum extent possible so that we realize the economic benefit and associated with that. Each year we have 360,000 acre feet of depletion within the basin that is not being used. Should we be looking at ways of realizing the benefits from that water? I have people call me on a regular basis, both public entities and private, who say, we've got a project, we need some water. Will you consider an application for us? And again, the reason that we're not willing to do that is because of the checking account is overdrawn. We got too many checks. We held public meetings in the basin, I believe it was last April. We came down to Moab and held one here. We held one over in Loa, Price, and then up in Vernal, discussing this very issue. We did receive some comments, but most of them were from public entities, and my impression of the comments was, don't mess with our water rights. Leave them alone. We want them. So, anyway, it's a challenge for us that we've got to deal with. All right, if we look at the water rights here in Castle Valley, there's four basic water rights that the town acquired from the old McCormick Ranch back in the 70s. The water right numbers that we show here, the area that we're in is the 05 hydrologic area that we refer to it as, and then the dash, and then the water right number, the file number associated with it. So we have water right number 05-387, 05-411, 05-641, and 05-709 that were acquired by the town. And then it is indicated that those water rights were used and certificated for irrigation purposes. And that stopped in the mid to late 1970s. These water rights have been used to then provide individual filings to each of the lots in town. I think there's just over 40 lots that now have perfected water rights on them. We listed the lot numbers here, and then the base water right that those refer back to. You'll notice most of them are based on 05-709. You can probably see your lot up there. Okay, within the valley, we also have a number of lots without water rights. You can see there's quite a few more lots without water rights associated with them than those who have developed the water and perfected the rights associated with it.
Weren't there two other rights?
Yes, there were two others in the 900 series that were segregated off of these early on. Yes. But these are the four major ones that we're concerned about at this particular time. In December, we sent out a letter to the town of Castle Valley. It was a letter that was a result of discussions that we had. And people have asked, why did you send the letter out? What was the purpose of it? Well, we are hopefully in the process of starting the general stream adjudication down in this area. And in doing so, then we're asked to evaluate the water rights. And so the issues with regards to the validity, the status of those water rights comes up. our staff in Price and the people here in the town of Castle Valley had discussions back and forth for quite some time, along with your legal counsel, trying to find some solutions there. But undoubtedly, there's some questions regarding the water rights that are held by the town and the issue of non-use. Under Utah statute 73-1-4, it deals with the issue of forfeiture or non-use. And non-use or forfeiture is determined through a judicial action. As state engineer, I cannot go out and say your water right has been forfeited and adjudicate that. What I do is go out and evaluate it, make a recommendation as part of the adjudication process, and then the judge is the one who decrees that. Has it been lost to forfeiture? Yes, no. And through that process, and Teresa will talk about that a little bit later, there is due process and you can participate in that. But as we've looked at the water rights that are held by Castle Valley, there is definitely an issue with regards to forfeiture and non-use. So the letter was intended to basically outline where we're at and then look at some possible options. In dealing with this issue, I don't think we're here to tell you what to do. I think we're here to discuss where we're at and where we might go from here. What uses are covered by a municipal water right? This is one of the issues that I think Castle Valley struggles with. Do you have water rights held by the municipality or do you have individual water rights? What kind of uses are included within municipal? Domestic, commercial, industrial, irrigation, stormwater. A municipality can have all kinds of uses. They can even waste water on a golf course if they want. But those are all considered municipal uses. Can municipal uses change over time? Can the configuration of the town change? Do they have to file a change application when that happens? No. There's some real flexibility given to municipalities. And that is by design, I think, as the legislature has looked at the issue of municipalities providing water. They realize the challenges that they face in dealing with growth. And you as an individual, when you develop a water right and perfect it, then you're required to show exactly how many acres you're irrigating. Is it for one family, two families? How many head of livestock are you watering? You have to define all of those beneficial uses. Where a municipality can say, no, we're using it for municipal purposes within our boundaries, and here's the measurements of the meter. It shows how much we use. So there's a lot of flexibility with regards to holding a municipal water right. I know there is some concern within the community as to how that should be done. Again, I don't think we're here to tell you that it should go one way or the other. The only point I would like to make, and I've come to this conclusion the last few weeks as I've looked at the water rights that are out there and the challenges that we're facing right now, maybe we're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Doesn't work real well. And so maybe there's some things that as we look to the future that we can sit down and discuss and see something that works well for you as a community and also for us as the administrator of the water rights in the area. We can all be Monday morning quarterbacks and say we could have, should have. But we're not here to point fingers. If anything, we're here to take the blame and to move forward. But here's a little saying by Albert Einstein. Our problems cannot be solved with the same level of thinking that created them. I think that's very enlightening. That we are where we are. How do we then move forward and deal with the challenges that we all face together? And I think that's what we're here today to discuss. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rick Wild, and he's going to talk about the Walmart shop. Any questions on the information that I presented?
Yes. Yeah, can you go back to those two slides that show what lots do and what lots don't?
And if
your
lot's not in there, what does that mean?
Now, some water rights have a have an agreement with the town still.
Go back one more. Okay. These are the lots. It's this row here, here, and here. Lots with perfected water rights under these three applications, or four applications.
You didn't define perfected or general.
Okay. Perfected is it's completed, you certificated it, went through the whole process. You placed it to beneficiary. Okay.
Are you saying that those mother rights there are valid?
I'm saying that these parent rights right here, these four, were the basis for the water rights associated with these lots, and that those water rights have been placed to use and are perfected.
So they're valid. They're not in question.
Yes.
Even though they come from these older rights.
Well, and that's something we'll talk about as we go along.
But so once they're perfected, they can't be lost at a future time. They've been through an adjudication and all that.
Again, as a holder of a water right, you have an obligation to continually use that water right. If you perfect it and then stop using it, say for 10 consecutive years, yes, you are subject to forfeiture.
Yeah. Okay.
You mentioned 5 years before.
No, well, I just give an example of 10 years.
But if I have an application, it can be good for up to 50 years?
No.
That's for a municipality.
That's for a municipality.
Okay. Okay.
Again, the limit on forfeiture, the statutory requirement, is 5 years. Does the state engineer set up in his office and watch the clock, and when it reaches 5 years, we're down here to say, yeah, it's lost to forfeiture? No, that's not what we're about.
So these lots, the town of Castle Valley gave these lots, these are legitimate water rights given from the town of Castle Valley.
Okay.
Yep. No.
Well,
the town
they weren't given.
They came from the original development.
They came from these four parent water rights.
From the
Corbin
Grant.
Yes.
Now,
go to the next slide.
So the town doesn't hold those water rights. They hold them individually.
That's right.
I think it's general.
Some of the town does.
A lot of these were segregated out before the town owned them.
But we have a mix. There's some that the town does hold the water right itself.
But your chart doesn't tell us whether we have good rights or not. Your office told me yesterday that on the road 5387, I have nothing to worry about for my water rights, but I'm not on the old chart.
Okay, what we're saying is these lots that we've listed here, we have record of those having put the water to use and perfected the change application to move it to these individual lots.
Now, is that proving up what we call proving?
Yes. Yes.
Go to the next chart.
Some of the rights up there were 987 or 9. Are, the not up there are from 985 and 987, and that might be your lot. That the reason it's not up there is it didn't come from one of those four. It might have came from one of those original 985 or 987.
The reference I had on the letter from you folks about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, was a 05387. I'll have something else.
Okay. And you're not on this list? Okay, we'd have to check that. But we thought we had all.
So, David?
Well, you just said about 5 years, and these people have used their water for 5 years. Most of us have. But what we understand is it's all about in the back. Before it became the subdivision in those 5 years. So why do these people have proved up rights? And they're good, valid rights if they're the same 5 years
And this gets to the heart of the issue. And I'm going to be very careful about the words that I use. In my position, I sat as a quasi-judicial official. And basically, that's the judge or the referee. You don't go into the courtroom and talk to the judge and say, well, how are you going to rule on this case, judge? And then decide whether you want to take it to him. So I've got to be very careful as I deal with this. But in essence, what we're saying is that, yes, there may be an issue with forfeiture. The approach that we're going to take as we deal with the general stream adjudication is we're going to come down and do field reviews. And let's say it's in May 2006. And if that water is being put to beneficial use, that's what we're going to write up and recommend to the claim, to the court, should be your claim for water.
Is there a difference between the big group and those eight below?
No.
And so the judge is going to be fair and equitable, right?
Well, I think the recommendation is going to be what is being used today will be recommended.
Including what's on that chart?
On this one here? No.
There are a lot of water users on that chart.
There are a lot of us on this chart.
Okay.
Have papers that say that we filed for water rights with you all. They may not have been proven up, but we filed for them and we're using them. So,
so this is what we're talking
and
about.
And if the water is being used today, or May, or whenever we come out, that's what we would write up and make the recommendation based on.
And will we know when you're going to come out?
Well, again, we have good intent. We hope it's within April, May, June.
And will that recommendation be through our town water right or through individual rights?
Well, again, I think that's one of the things we've got to work through is decide. Is it in the name of the town and then you have a contract for it? Those are issues that we've got to work through. And we probably need to sit down with you and see why.
And I have copies of the documents from John Grew, who supposedly at one point was the water commissioner out here.
Well, he was the mayor.
And he was the mayor. And, it says we got water rights, but we're not on either chart.
And again, I think what we're saying here is these lots do not have water rights. There's probably some who have approved, yet unperfected.
Right, or they have an agreement with the town that we haven't been out to.
You may want to comment on the other two mother rights.
The 900?
They're not listed.
Okay. Are you aware of those? Can you speak to those?
I just know that there's been a lot. Those were the first ones split up, 985 and 987.
Right.
And those were pending water rights. They were segregated off of the perfected rights. And so the developers split those off first, and those were basically perfected first. And I don't think there's any question on those that have done the proof on 985 and 987. And there's the majority of the water rights done up here in the north end came from 985 and 987, those that were settled first.
Yeah, so really these two charts that we have here don't show everything, do they?
No.
Okay.
So what about if we're not on either chart, does that mean we might be on the 907 or the...
Yes.
And how do we find that out?
We can do a web search to see by your ownership and find out what water right you do have.
I actually have the book, too, that I did bring a book that I'll be here tomorrow, Dave and I, and anybody that has any questions after 1 o'clock, if they want to, we have appointments up till 1, but after 1, if they would like to stop in and just look at the book, we have a history of where their original right came from or where your right came from.
What about the 70-plus lots that were segregated out that were withdrawn in that 2001, 2003?
Withdrawn those.
This was something that the town did. I don't think this was your office.
No.
But no, this related to the change in application.
It was supposed to simplify things and make it easier for the town. And so you still have a contract with the town, and it's still one of those that if you're using the water right, they'll be out this spring or summer to look at that and perfect that for you under the agreement with the town. But it was just withdrawn basically and canceled at that time to make it. So all the, they were getting tons of extensions of time and proof due notices on each one, and they just thought it'd be easier to have 30 or 40 at once and say these 30 or 40 lots are ready to prove up on it rather than all these individual ones coming in.
But they weren't forfeited.
No, they're still in the town's name, and you still have an agreement with the town, and they'll be out to look at them this.
Oh, good.
So has there been no change in the water rights of the town?
No, I think the water rights of the town on the four water rights that we've put up there, there are some issues with regards to those. On that portion of them that is not being used today.
So what you're saying is that if it's being used today, you'll come out and certify that's okay. But the unused portion of the town's rights, those are the ones that you're not so certain will survive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm lost or not able to know well my user water rights. Or potentially get them.
What, say that again.
Lots that are not built might lose the potential of getting water rights in the future.
Well, again, I think we're going to talk about some options. Drilling well, proving up, and so forth. It is quite a process. The overhead associated with it is enormous. And think of it from our point of view. We regulate water rights. But in the case of Castle Valley, it's almost like regulating individual water meters within a community. And we don't want to do that. That's too much work. But that's what we've almost got here. And so we need to maybe back up and rethink what we're trying to do here. I think we empathize with you, but again, there are certain limits that we need to work with.
Do you have any enforcement? I mean, I'm on the list if I don't have any right, but I have a start card, so I have a well. Do I have to care about having a right?
Yes.
And you're going to come cap my well? I mean, what?
Well, again, we're not setting up there just waiting for somebody to do something wrong and go after them. But last year, through the legislative process, the state engineer's enforcement powers were greatly enhanced. And so you do not want to get on the wrong side of the law.
So I'm already on the wrong side. So
okay. We're here to help you get on the right side.
Okay.
And that's what we're all about here. That's why we're down here.
Well, with all due respect, maybe you need to know where we're coming from, and that is, back in 99, this community gave up a water right at the advice, from our knowledge, of the Water Rights Department to give up our municipal water right, which would solve all our problems today. And so we're feeling like we gave up a water right, now all of a sudden the water rights that were supposed to be good have been taken from us or are in question. So
wasn't that the fixed time application?
That was, sir. Yes.
David, I don't think that was a municipal right.
Okay, well, the fixed time application.
Mm-hmm. And a fixed time application is for a certain duration at which time basically it terminates. The reason that we've done that is, again, because of the over-allocation in the Colorado River Basin. We haven't been approving additional water rights in perpetuity.
But you see from our perspective how we feel kind of like we've been hung out to dry.
Yeah, but again, I don't think we're here to point fingers. You or us or anybody. We are where we are. Let's deal with it and go forward and find a solution. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Rick and let him do his presentation. And hopefully he'll clear out a lot of the issues I've raised.
Throw them out there.
Again, I'm Rick Wild. I'm with the Price Office, and I just wanted to talk on these three points here. Our current water right policy for the Castle Valley area, and also the application process and where that goes once the application's filed. And then I'd also like to talk a little bit about proof versus election and maybe settle some questions there that you might have. The water right policy for the Castle Valley area is 6.73 acre feet. And where that kind of came from is studies have been done and using the elevations and soil types to figure the amount that it would take to water an acre of irrigation in this area, they figure would be 6 acre feet per year. One hole figures 3.45 acre feet per year. And then, just for example, one head of one cow horse, they figure drinks 25 gallons per day, and that's 0.028, and so you times that by 10, and those figures all add up to the 6.73. And that's the largest filing that we can approve right now in this area. Once an application is filed with our office, state engineer reviews it, or we review it first in the Price Office for its completeness. If the application we feel is complete, we'll send it to the advertising. It's advertised for 2 consecutive weeks, and at the end of that advertising period, and that's basically where most of the fee goes, is the cost of advertising. It's quite high. At the end of the advertising, there's a 20-day protest period, and at that time, the state engineer reviews the application, and the application is either rejected or it's approved. Generally, when it's approved, the application's approved for 3 to 5 years, in which it gives you the time to place the water to beneficial use. Basically, what that is what you've applied for on the application. Now, something when I'm taking phone calls on applications, something that I've brought up to people is you can apply for the maximum, the 6.73, but it doesn't mean you have to put the full acre in to prove up on your water right. Most people start pumping and realize that either from the flow of the well or whatever, that it's not feasible to. Or they don't want to farm a full acre of ground. And so as I get into the proof process next, when they do the proof on it, they'll actually reduce the water right to what the actual uses are. Most of the time it's somewhere between a quarter and a half acre. Sometimes there's 3 head of cattle or none, and then of course the domestic use. But a water right after the proof is submitted is then considered perfected. And go ahead, Dave. The last thing I wanted to talk about is this last part in the process, proof versus election. Currently, there are the two options when proving up a water right. A proof is a document attesting to the water permitted for use that had been applied to beneficial use and is completed by either a registered land surveyor or an engineer. A lot of you know Tim Keogh in the Moab area. He does a lot of the proofs. I know he's done some here in the Castle Valley area. And then the other option is an election. And it's a statement filed with the state engineer's office in a select active adjudication area in lieu of proof, and it's done by basically the Price Office. I've probably met with most of you when you've proved up a water right, and we've done this election. Two things I want to mention here. The process for proof or election is only done one time. It's not every 5 years. It's just a one-time deal. And second, in either case, with the proof or an election, the well is surveyed in, the flow measurement made, and domestic and stock watering use is verified, and then the irrigation measured. Bring one other thing to your attention that I wrote down as a critical note, that once an adjudication is completed, the election order is lifted,
And your only option at that point is to prove up a water right is with a surveyor or a proof engineer. And I guess with that, do you want me to take questions or turn that over there?
Any questions for Rick?
Is the validity of each one the same? Is the election as good as the
They both, through the adjudication, end up with a water user claim. With the proof, you receive a certificate of appropriation from our office. And with the election, you receive a water user claim. After an adjudication is complete, both the certificate, water right, and the other one, they both end up with the water user claim in the end. But they're both considered proved up on.
What happens to all these documents that Mr. Grew was collecting over the years? How are they going to be used? And will they help you with your water right? I mean, when we bought the lot out in 97, and then we started building in 99, we applied for, I don't even remember what it was. Like, let's say it was 5 acres in a year. I don't know what we're using here, because we don't have a meter on the farm. But where do those applications go to?
They went to our office, and that's part of the process with John at the time. It went through the town, and then they filed the change application through our office, and then this process took place.
I didn't see my particular lot number. I don't see my neighbor.
Well, that's what I said. Tomorrow we can meet. If you want to stop by, we can look at that.
I would, but I'll be over in Grand Junction.
Well, give me a call. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim, you could do that. You could check with them because they didn't get on that chart.
And I'll leave a copy of that. I'll have Damian make a copy, and he'll have it here at the office that people can stop by and check out tomorrow.
Sure.
What if you're already using Ruby 6.7?
Some of the rights were larger than that. A lot of the rights that come off of 985 and 987 were from 9 to... in fact, Joan Sangri had a water right agreement through the town that we stopped by and checked to see how much she'd need, and one of hers rights is for 19 acre feet. But a lot of the rights were first split off, and those two rights were for 9 acre feet. That was just kind of Jeff, your right could be more than just the 6.73.
So after you prove it all up, what if you decide you want to use another acre of your land? What do you have to go through to get more water?
Okay. Come in and fill that one.
Sure.
Please. Okay. The figures that Rick showed up there, the 6.73, again, that is by policy. The basin is over appropriated on paper. So we're not using it. So the decision was made, and I think it was in 91, somewhere around there, that the policy within the Colorado River Basin would be, we'll approve applications for one family, up to 1 acre of irrigation, and a few head of stock. Okay? And so that's where the number comes from.
That's the limit.
Yes, that's the limit that we deal with. If you've got a lot that is 3 acres or 5 acres, what we're saying is the policy only allows the 1 acre of irrigation, the one family, and the 10 head of stock. If you want to do something other than that, then you'll have to go out and acquire another water right transfer.
What about the people that are just buying water now? Will they have the same thing?
Okay. The policy at this time is to allow what Rick reviewed. And so if you just bought a lot today, yes, you could file an application for the one family, 1 acre, and have stuff.
And of course, if you sell it, you can hand it down to the buyer, right?
Yes. Okay. But again, we're not saying that policy is going to be in place forever. That's what it is today.
What about people who have a lot and they're not going to build for another 5 or 6 years, but already have a well on there and have turned their rights over to the town?
Okay. Again, I think those are some of the problems we've got to work through.
if the right has not been used, if the well's just sitting there and there's no use of it, then that's when we get into the trouble. And again, as state engineer, when we do the adjudication, I just cannot ignore forfeiture. It's in the law, and I raised my hand and said I would uphold the law. And we would deal with
that. It changed the law, though. You know, when it's time we got set up, you know, you have it. And I
don't think this portion of the law has changed in substance. Yes, in 2002, they specifically went back and defined it so there was no question about partial forfeiture.
Yeah, this was all done before. You know what I'm saying?
And again, I'm not here to point fingers or say we should have, could have. We are where we are. Let's go forward.
For the record, I will be required to say who said what question, so please just state your name for the record.
Okay, Jim Clark. And let's just try to keep it kind of.
Yeah, I'm just confused on the 6.75 because we all read in the TI today that you're processing an application for somebody for 30-acre deed. And then, of course, you mentioned showing there are 19 and a half.
Right. And those are based on existing water rights.
Oh, no. Nobody has. I assume they had no rights, otherwise they wouldn't be processing an application. The 30 that we read.
The 30 in the paper today.
What's that?
And they have
I don't know what that is.
Or the gentleman had that extra lot and he filed a fixed time for fifth grades.
Okay. So that's a fixed time application. What they're telling.
Do they have water rights today is the question. If not, why do they get more than 6.75?
Okay. Again, we will consider applications for fixed time above the one family, 1 acre, and 10 head of stock.
So what's fixed time?
So fixed time is approved for, say, 10 years, 20 years, at which time then it terminates. I don't think that's what you want. And the reason that we're willing to do it is we've got the 360,000 acre feet that is not being used. And so it allows that water to be used until those other water rights come online and resolve the issues associated with it.
Okay, David, I'm just going in order.
Hey, Riley, I got a question as to whether there's any difference when you go through the adjudication process between an election and approving.
Okay, and I
think it sounds like there's no difference.
I think there's some people who would say there is probably some difference. I know there have been people in adjudication areas who have actually went through the proof process because they want to get a certificate of beneficial use. They think it is more, has more weight, you might say. Again, that is up to you. From a legal standpoint, I don't think there's any difference. It's still a perfected water right. It is evidence that the water has been placed to beneficial use. And in the adjudication process, you end up with a water user's claim to update that water right, similar to what happens during an election anyway. And then the important thing is that the judge then takes that data and information and bases the decree as to what the water rights should be. But again, we're not telling you you should do one or the other. You need to make a choice there. In some areas, people have elected to go through the approved process so they can get the certificate. So it's up to you.
There's somebody up front.
Yeah. So if someone has been using their water for 20 years, or 15 years, is there an adverse possession?
No. Adverse possession was a provision under the law where, say, on Castle Creek, you were using water on the lower end of the valley and somebody went up above you and actually stole the water from you and did it openly and notoriously. And you didn't do anything about it, and they did it for a period of time. Then they could establish a right. However, the legislature passed a law in 1939 that says we don't want any more of that. It was chaos. And so adverse use is no longer a part of our statute.
So someone could be using their water for 20 years, and because of its 5-year forfeiture, in the mid-70s, and they've been using it maybe from 1980 to now.
Okay.
They have no right to use that water.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Her question was, if someone acquired a portion of one of these water rights that was not used for 5 years, and then they used it for 15 or 20 years, are they still subject to the forfeiture? If you look at the existing law, it says that if you did not use the water for 5 years, and then you started to use it again, and if you use it for 15 years, then in essence, that's wiped out. But that's not even what we're saying here. What we're saying is, in this particular case, if you've got a water right on your lot based on one of the four water rights in question, we're coming down, hopefully this year, we're going to look at it. What you are using today is what we're going to write up. Now, don't force me to say I'm going to ignore forfeiture, because I'm not going to tell you that. I can't do that. I'm telling you that as a division, we're going to come down, look at the water use as it's occurring at this time, and we'll write the claim up. That's what I'm saying we're going to do. And again, I have to be careful what I say.
I think Jeff was next.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it would be beneficial to apply for the 6.7 request a fixed time use for 20 years or so. Would that be a possibility, or would we be better off if we use point for the 6.7 to apply to the town and then have that adjudicated through the truth?
And those are all possibilities. I don't want to come down here and tell you this is what you ought to do. I think we're here to explore possibilities, and then you need to decide what is in your best interest. The options that you listed are all very viable. But again, you need to look at your own situation, and does the city have something that could be transferred to you and you put it to beneficial use in a reasonable period of time, those type of things. And if you remember the letter, we basically said, okay, we're acknowledging the problem as of this day. Let's don't keep perpetuating the problem. And
I think Ken was next.
Yeah, this is Ken Drogan. I've been in the nursery and landscaping business, and over the years have helped quite a few people in the valley here prove up on their water rights on the basis of planting trees with a drip irrigation system. And in the past, your policy has been for large-sized trees like cottonwoods to allow up to a 60 by 60 square foot space for even a small seedling cottonwood tree on a drip irrigation system, and at that rate it comes to prove up on an acre, it comes out to only 20 or 21 trees per acre, which is not that difficult to do. And I'm wondering, is that policy still in place?
Rick had a slide on that earlier, but he took it out. The last version I saw was still in there, but they must have just took that. But they had the various trees and the radius of those as far as the effective irrigation and so forth. Again, as we look at what is the irrigation under that water right, and we commend you for putting in drip irrigation and being efficient and so forth in doing that. You're doing a great service to yourself as well as the public in general. And so as we go out and do it, if you've got a row of trees, then yeah, we've got some numbers that we say, okay, for this particular tree, maybe it's a small tree right now, but maybe it will have a radius of this. We'll figure out that. Total goes up, and that becomes your irrigation. Is it I think it's a reasonable approach to it.
I agree, but I'm just, as far as the great disparity is, say you have 6.73 acre feet to prove up on, and you're using a drip system to water 21 trees, and you're only using a fraction of that.
Yes.
I'm not complaining. I think it's a great policy. I just want people to know that they don't have to, like, put in a sprinkler system to cover a whole acre. They can plant 21 trees with a drip system and still prove up on their irrigation.
If they're spaced far enough apart, that's correct. We've treated them as if they're a mature orchard or tree.
And the slide that Rick showed you earlier said 1 acre of irrigation, 6 acre feet per acre. That is the duty. Admittedly, that is very generous. And it's for flood irrigation purposes. But again, what are we charged on in the Colorado River Basin? It's how much you deplete, not how much you divert. So the remainder of it should get back to the system as return flow.
I think we have Dave and then Bob and somebody cover your question, David.
I was just curious why the town, if it would be possible for the town to reapply for a fixed-use type light like the one we lost. If there's anything we could, why we couldn't do that today, because it seems like all of us as individuals can reapply for our rights under the system that's being proposed. Why couldn't the town get its right back somehow?
And I think the city could do that. I struggle with approving fixed time applications for municipalities. I'm not sure that's in the best interest to build a community economy based on a fixed time, and then it paints you and the state engineer in a corner when that time period runs out.
Well, we keep getting a lot of advice from different people that a municipality needs to hold water rights, so we're very concerned about the system that basically will go along and we'll all have individual rights, but our town won't have any rights. So we're trying to figure out a solution to get around that.
Well, and the slide that I talked about, private rights versus municipalities, I at least wanted to start thinking about that. Again, I'm not down here to tell you how to do it, but there are definite advantages of holding municipal water rights as opposed to private individual rights. And you as a community need to decide what's in your best interest.
The town has a concern that we don't withdraw from the aquifer beyond our recharge rate, and that we don't allow salts to infiltrate and contaminate the quality of our water. What under this process can or does your office do to ensure that we remain sustainable with our aquifer? And what can the town do if it is not holding its own water right to maintain?
Okay. In this last legislative session, there was a bill, House Bill 228, Groundwater Management Plan, and it passed. It was a issue that I took to the legislature 3 years ago, and we have several groundwater basins in the state where we're overdrafting or mining groundwater today. And we felt it was an important enough issue, we needed some legislative direction, clarification on it. The bill that was passed has basically four major components to it. First of all, in administering groundwater, it is done on the doctrine of prior appropriation. First in time, first in round. The second item is safe or sustainable yield. That it is the policy of the state of Utah in managing its groundwater supplies to do it on the long-term safe yield of that basin. In addition, it gives the state engineer authority to develop groundwater management plans in any basin or aquifer system to regulate the use of that water, taking into account water quality, the physical integrity of the system, localized interference, and a number of other issues we can take into account. That groundwater management plan can be done at the initiation of the state engineer, if I get a request from one third of the water users in that area, then I'm obligated to go do a groundwater management plan. Then the fourth item is in those basins where we're already overdrafting, then it allows some flexibility in gradually bringing that system back into balance. So I think this legislature has taken a major step forward on the issue of groundwater management in saying that we want to use our groundwater supplies based on a long-term sustainable basis.
Jim, are you following up?
Well, just for clarification, it's a third of the right holders in the basin?
I'd have to get the law to look at it, but it's my interpretation. It is a third of the users. And somebody may hold a 100-acre-foot water right, and you hold a one. You still have one vote. He still has one vote.
Thank you very much. Okay, Jim?
I don't know if you're aware. Is it 6.76 acre feet
6.73 is the policy.
Per acre?
No. That is the total that you can file on. The duty per acre is 6.0.
Okay. Are you aware that the average lot in this valley is, I guess I would say, 5 acres plus or minus 5/10?
Yes.
So actually, a person like, if Jeff is drawing more than, let's say he's drawing 12 or 15 acre feet per year, and he's got a 5-acre lot, he still might would be using up his a lot.
And again, the duty that Rick alluded to, that is the maximum. We realize it's high. We're very conservative about that, and we encourage you to be more conservation-minded. But there may be situations, depending upon the situation, whether it's a long canal, sandy soil, flood irrigation practices, where that much water is needed to mature a crop. And so we, rather than to go piece by piece and say, okay, you get this much, you get this much, we set at least the maximum irrigation duty, and then you can go up to that. We don't like you to exceed that. But if you can do it with less than that, that's great. The same with domestic. We say 0.45 acre foot per family. That's in-house use. My own house, we use a quarter of an acre foot a year. In-house. And so, yeah, you can get by with less than that. We're just telling you those are the maximum limits.
Sir?
On your type of prior priority, right? What's the prior
appropriation doctrine?
Thank you. That one. Does it mean that those of us have the 8:30 appointment with you tomorrow are better off than the 10:30?
I mean by 10:30, Rick's going
to be more out. No, more seriously, you say you've wiped out those hundreds of rights. You say you no longer have rights. They were all, they were listed in time, and they may or may not come back based on your coming and proving up in May, June, July, hopefully this year. Will that be reinstated, or are we all starting over? Should we scramble to be first?
Again, I think our system is the prior appropriation system. First in time, first in right. I can't change that. So in times of shortage, if we have to start cutting people off, and I hope we never get to that point where we're cutting off domestic use, yes, we would have to cut by priority.
I'm asking how that priority is now being reestablished since you've wiped out our rights.
Well,
is it coming back tomorrow morning or when?
It would be when you file it. But again, I'm not so sure that on those lots where you're using the water today, you're losing it. That's not what we're saying. If you're using the water today and you've been using it,
so we're back to my original invalid right.
I'd like to just make one point. I think what Jim Karp is getting at is that if he, for instance, sits on a town right and it is currently in use and your office recommends it for approval, his priority date on that right will be the priority date that the town right originally had.
Yes.
Whereas if he was to abandon that
you.
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
Versus when we stack up with you tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
This is Mary Dassler. If you you talked about that you don't want to tell people what they should do, but that having the town hold a municipal water right is more beneficial than individual rights. Is that a viable option? Is that something that can actually happen, that the town can hold municipal water rights?
Yes, the town of Castle Valley would be considered a municipality or public water supply agency and could realize the benefits that a municipality has under the water law. Now, there's a lot of challenges to Castle Valley Town because of the nature of your geography here, your big lots, your long ways away, it's very costly, you run pipelines on and on and on.
No, I don't mean pipelines, I just mean the town holding a water right.
Okay.
Putting in any system.
Okay, and that's the square peg in the round hole. What you're asking me to do is to go into a community and, in essence, regulate each meter within that community. Tremendous workload for us, as well as you.
Are there any towns that are currently doing that?
No. So you're very unique. Right, so Loretta?
Yes. I know you don't want to go back to the McCormick issue, but what I want to ask is, if we prove up our water now, could you come back and say, oh, in 1920 there was this problem, and now we've got to redo this again?
Okay.
Is that a possibility?
Again, the state engineer sets as kind of the referee. And so I have to look at it from a neutral standpoint. So what I told you is we're going to come down, and if you're using it, we're going to recommend to the court. And remember, recommend to the court that water right be granted. Could somebody else come in and challenge that? Yes. And it is subject to challenge by someone else. And at that point in time, you both put on your case, the guy in the black robe, and make a decision. That'd be it.
Oh, so it's never really clear.
Once the judge rules on it, though, in the adjudication, it wipes that issue away. We then move forward. Then, after it is decreed, someone could not go back and say, in 1975, they quit using this water, and they did not start using it until 1989. Therefore, it's forfeited. Once the judge issues that decree, the slate is wiped clean.
So, it sounds like a town would hold municipal water rights if they had a municipal system, but a town could not hold acre feet in trust for us lawholders? Is that what you're talking
about? I didn't say that. I'm just saying there's not a community in the state that has done that. It is very, very difficult for us to administer, and I'm not sure I want to go down that road, but I'm at least willing to discuss options, alternatives with you to see if we can find a solution. Something that doesn't work us to death and provides the protection, the flexibility, the city, the security, the city, the town is looking for.
I think that is.
So I went and filed for my water right again, but am I being told now that I've given up my right to go through the adjudication and hold on to my old water right because I filed a new one? Or can I go through the adjudication, and if my right survives, my old one, I get to keep it, and I can give up my new one?
Okay. Well, what's your situation with your old one?
Well, you told me that it's no good under the old
Are you using it today?
Oh, hell yeah.
How come we told you that?
I don't think we have.
Well, I'm not saying he told me that, but we've been told down here in the valley, basically, that we should run up and get our water rights because we're all going to have to go for private water rights, first in right, first in time. You want to be up there. So I went and filed.
Well, I think there's been some confusion, Dave, but just to, what I think what he's talking about is, can he keep his new right as a backup filing?
Okay.
For my old right.
Okay.
I'd much rather keep my first in right, first in time. It's
yes.
A lot earlier.
But, well, in his particular case, we do not want to double up water rights on the same lot. Again, this policy that we're talking about for one family, 1 acre, in the start. That is from Daggett County to Kane County. It applies for the entire basin. And if I start allowing in Castle Valley 2 water rights per lot, I'm in trouble. Because people will use the system to get around it and so on. So 1 water right per lot, whether it's something you've acquired from the city that you've developed and so forth, or whether you file it, we'd like to maintain it at 1.
So for clarification, I've given up my old water right by filing it in.
No.
No.
No, if it goes through the adjudication, and like he says, it becomes decreed, you can withdraw your application that you filed in the office and maintain your original one.
And that gives you any kind of a backup insurance,
well,
if you want
to
say,
in
case there is any problem. I think Ken was next.
Yeah, I'm the president of the Castle Valley Irrigation Company. The ditch system we have here in the lower part of the valley, we have a senior water right of a substantial amount of 5.73 cubic feet per second. And we have issues. We're looking at the mountains now, looking at probably a low water year. We have issues with upstream users. And what is your, can your office offer us any help in getting our, using our water rights?
Okay. When you say using your water right, is it basically regulating the users on it so that, in essence, you get what you think is your fair share?
Correct.
Okay. Under the law, there's a system that can do that. Basically, what we do is go in and set up a distribution system. And then we appoint a water commissioner, who then goes up and regulates the head gates based on priority. The cost of that water commissioner is assessed to the water user. Then you're required to pay that money to our office. We account for it with a local committee that oversees it and so forth. And then we pay out to the water commissioner his salary, his expenses to do that. But yes, it is doable.
If we need to do that, what's the process for starting that?
Okay, you'd have to submit a request to our office. And then we would look at that.
And that request would be a request for a water commissioner?
A water distribution system. And I'm not saying we would necessarily do it. Depending upon what this year turns out to be, we may be spread pretty thin. Particularly in the southern half of the state, it's extremely dry, as you know.
Who's next?
Yeah. Now, we've still got one more presentation on adjudication.
I think a lot of the questions will be answered with her Teresa's presentation.
Hopefully not more.
Okay, let's have Teresa go through hers.
Jerry, I'm Teresa, and basically I'm kind of manage the adjudication that's going to be occurring here in the next few months. So mainly tonight, what I wanted to do was first of all introduce myself, because you may see me or you may see some other people that I've sent down here actually doing the investigations and collecting the data. And a couple of things that I just wanted to try and address is, first of all, I'll try to cover with you the adjudication process. And I can't remember what Jerry called it earlier, but it can be very confusing. And a lot of times it gets very confused with their appropriation process, which is what Rick kind of talked about, 6.73. And we do interrelate a little bit, so there could be some confusion. I was going to explain to you how the adjudication specifically relates to this area, kind of the history of where it came from, and then how it may affect you as lot owners here. And hopefully that will answer some of your questions.
Yeah, you have to move out of the way.
As Jerry previously explained, an adjudication is a judicial process whereby water rights are determined, a determination is made, and then they're decreed by a court. Chapter 73.4 of the Utah Code actually gives the authority and direction to the state engineer for conducting a determination of the water rights for a water source or a system. District courts, and you should be aware that the district courts have ordered adjudications throughout the entire state. There's only two areas that do not have active orders, and that's the Sevier River and the Weaver River. Once an adjudication commences in an area, all of the water rights within that area are determined and investigated. As part of the investigation, we do go in and we look at the extent of use under those existing water rights, and they're located, and then we define that extent of use. And as Jerry has talked about quite a bit, we do look at issues of non-use, and we make determinations or recommendations to the courts on the use and the potential non-use of a water right. Part all wrapped into this adjudication, what we'll actually do is we create hydrographic survey maps that outline the extent of those uses, locate points of diversion like wells, creeks, streams, and then we actually will prepare what we call a water user's claim, which is the water user's claim to the use of water. And then we will ask that entity or individual to sign those water user's claims. Then we submit those documents to the court. For tonight, the area that you are included in, it's called the Colorado River Drainage Area, and you can kind of see from this map, we've titled this the Castle Creek Subdivision, and it's Area 05, which is the hydrologic area, and all the water rights in this area are numbered 05 something, and this is book one. So it's kind of the first book that is in this area. And you'll see from that map, it basically extends from the Colorado River over to the Colorado state line. Here's my pointer. And then from Porcupine Ridge, and it goes all the way up to the top above Westwater. So we're dealing with this entire area, and you'll see Castle Valley. You guys are kind of this portion down here. But we are taking water users' claims for anything within this in this area, any water use within that area. So how did this adjudication begin? This adjudication actually began by a petition by the state engineer in 1957. And it was initiated, his petition was prompted by letters received from users on a few of the creeks within the Colorado River Basin. There was actually four creeks that some users filed letters to the state engineer asking for help, that there were some problems. So he petitioned the courts in 1957 asking for an adjudication order. The court ordered the adjudication in 1961, and it included all of the Colorado River Basin, excluding the Green River. And then in 1988, because a lot of work had been done in the entire basin to the north and west of the river, and very little had been done to the south and east of the Colorado River, in 1988, the state engineer asked that those two areas be severed from the original adjudication, which they did. Then we started taking claims in the early 90s in areas that were south and east of the Colorado River. In this particular book one, which you are in, there are approximately, when we do a search list of our database, we come up with about 450 water rights that are in this area. And when you look at 450 in the town of question, there's four in question out of 450. So there's only a handful that we still have left to be completed. And I know Jerry mentioned earlier that we're actually finishing. We're about ready to wrap it up. Let's see. So as we look at kind of the areas, the area that we're dealing with here, and the last remaining handful of water rights that we need to. And if development is completed, like Jerry said, when I come out this spring or summer, if I see a use, I'm going to write a claim for that use. So if you have a contract with the town under those four water rights and your development is completed, notify the town. And then once there's a group of lots that do have notified them that development is completed, we will do, it says OSTEG on there, what that is an ownership segregation. We'll pull those lots into a separate water right number, and then the town can choose to either file a proof of beneficial use or an election. And then we'll process water users' claim based on that information and include it in the adjudication. The second situation is if you have a contract with the town of Castle Valley and your development is partially completed and you want to finish your development, you probably should have done it yesterday, or at least have it done when we get here. But then also notify the town when your development's done. The third situation that we kind of see here is that there is no development on a lot, and there's no plans to develop in the near future, then what can the people do? And at this time, you can file a new application to appropriate the 6.73 that Rick explained, or you could acquire an existing water right within the basin and file a change application to move it. And I don't think we really talk much about that, mainly the 6.73. And there's our website. If you want any additional information or want to see what water right you have, you can log on to our website, do a name search, and see what rights you've got. Or I guess Rick and his guests will be here tomorrow. And then I just kind of wanted to summarize the adjudication process. So what's going to happen is this spring and early summer, we're actually going to come out, take a look at what the uses are, sort out who's using what, where, do some hydrographic survey maps, write up some water users' claims to prepare them for what we call a proposed determination book. I would also stress that you might want to just check and make sure that you have current title on your water right with the division and that your address is correct, because we'll mail notices to the last address of record. But we will take all of those claims, we'll put them into a proposed determination book, and we'll publish that and mail copies, distribute copies to all of the affected users within the area. That is what's also filed with the courts and becomes the state engineer's recommendations to the courts of what to recognize in this area. Once we publish that book, there is a 90-day objection period where someone can file an objection to what his recommendation is. If they say the water right's been subject or lost to non-use, then they go to the judge and ask the judge to decide that. So there is that 90-day objection period once the proposed determination book is published. We'll also publish a second summons, because there may be a water user that we're just completely unaware of, we didn't see, we had no record of them, and that will advise them what they need to do to become a party to this action with the courts. If we receive objections or there's typographical errors, we'll produce an addendum to that book, which will address any new issues that were raised possibly during the 90-day objection period and give another recommendation to the court. We don't always do addendums, but lately we have. Then what we'll do is we'll actually ask the courts to give an interlocutory decree once that process is completed. And that is kind of a temporary decree that decrees those water rights within that book boundary until a final decree on the entire basin is issued. Once that final decree is issued, it decrees all the rights within that basin. But remember, you're in a basin that's the entire southeast corner from Colorado. So the final decree may be quite a few years, maybe not even in my career. and essentially, that is just a brief overview of the adjudication process. And I know it can be very confusing, so if you have any questions, feel free to ask me. And then Jerry's going to do a little conclusion.
Any questions for Teresa?
Yes, I have a couple of questions. In your experience, from the time that the Division of Water Rights completes its review of the area, how long does it take before you publish the
termination.
We actually, as you can see, we started taking water user claims in this area in 1990. We have a few books that have taken 5, 10, 15 years to publish. About a year and a half ago, Jerry formed what was called an adjudication team, where we go into a particular area with a team of people, and that is what we are focused on.
Well, let's take this case. If you finish by June, call the Castle Valley. Do you have any general estimates of how long then you take for your publishing?
Fall.
And what do you consider publication? Is it filing with the court or something else?
We actually will file a copy with the courts. We'll notify the court.
Would that be the publication date?
Yes, when we mail it to all of the users, or we may potentially come out and actually hand distribute it, and we'll set up a date when we're ending it.
You'll specify a date.
Yeah.
And finally, after the interlocutory decree is issued, prior to the final, is the interlocutory decree subject to any kind of challenge that the final decree is not?
No.
Only the rights that were protested would be subject to.
So otherwise, it is, for us, it is like a final decree. If someone doesn't appeal it within the appropriate period, specified period of time, there's not going to be a change.
Question about the situation three. We're not going to do the whole thing in the 5 years. You're supposed to run out and make an application anyway, or wait until the future when they're actually going to do something?
And I think you need to kind of decide that. But what will happen is if you apply for an application to appropriate now, you're given 3 to 5 years to develop it. And then you need to file proof of beneficial use. So.
And if nothing happens, it'll lapse.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, if you just wait, maybe 10 years you apply, just rolling the dice.
Yeah, or you can always acquire an existing right of right within the basin and file a change. It does go through a process to see if it can be approved, but that's the other option that we haven't talked much about.
Joan?
If someone challenges that 90-day period, what options does the person who was challenged have?
You could, I guess, provide evidence to the court against that challenge.
So, for instance, if somebody's using, put to that official use that's been checked by you folks and been published, etc., and then somebody decides to challenge that, what's a valid challenge? Or, person's already proved by your command looking that there's beneficial use, it's still a beneficial use, but somebody's got a stick running or something. What options are there for the person whose line rights are being challenged?
I think it comes just with what Jerry had explained, that becomes an issue where the two parties then ask the guy in the black coat to issue an order, get a court order as to what is.
If this is frivolous, he'll probably throw it out.
And I have a question. Did you say that if there was a period of non-use, but there had been a subsequent period of use for 15 years, that it would
de-racism?
Yeah.
That's in the statute.
Yeah.
They call it the Lazarus provision. The reason for it was municipalities and others were fearful that they were going to acquire water rights in good faith, use those water rights, and then somebody would come back and say, no, that was lost to non-use X number of years ago. And so as they looked at it, that was the compromise they came to. Was, well, maybe if you put it back in use for 15 years, then we ought to just move forward with it and forget about going back in time. And so there is that 15-year period.
This is Dave Early again. Why hasn't Castle Valley been deemed to be using our water for 15 years? That was back in the 70s. We've been using it since.
And I think, in essence, that's what we're saying with those that are using it today.
So you still have to prove up, even if you've been using it for that 15-year period?
prove up from the sense that it may be a change application or something that's moved it to that. But yes, you have to finalize that process.
And for people that already have a water user's claim, is there any further checks that's going to be done or anything we need to do?
No, we did do some preliminary mapping with some of those water user claim locations previously, and they're not quite fitting on some of the lots. So we might just do a double check and see what happened there. But no, we won't. We won't go back and redo RIP's work. Let's move forward.
I think Rick is very aware. There's a bunch of people in this room who are under the change application process that was set up in 2000. Is there anything different that's going to happen with regard to their situation and they're in use and it's a contract with the town? Is there anything different about those people versus people who were segregated in the earlier part of the 90s?
The only difference, and that's going to be worked out with the town, is whether that's in the town's name or the individual's name. But currently, it would be in the name of the town,
right.
But it would be perfected under the same right.
Right. And the whole principle that Jerry articulated of it's in use, it still applies to those people.
Sure. Same priority, even.
Their priority goes by the date they make the agreement with the town?
No. The
same priority is 68?
Yes, the original water right, yeah.
Generally, it would be 68.
Rebecca?
That brings me to my question. Is at the point in the education where the address has to be correct and the person has to be notified, if it is unclear whether the town is to receive the notice or the person is to receive the notice, which I think is part of the problem with what he was just talking about, who is supposed to expect this notice? Can the property owner rest assured that they will, or will the town receive the notice and the town will then have to distribute those?
If the right is in the name of the town in our record, that's who will receive the copy for that water right. If you have a water right in your individual name, then you will receive a copy as an individual because you hold a water right individually. Like the 980, what were those?
985 and 987.
Most of those were held in individual names.
All of them.
All of them were held in. So those people will individually be served a copy of the book. For the four that have the change applications, I think most of them are in the name of the town. And so the town will receive a copy.
The one Jerry showed was perfected. The majority of those from that 709 are in individual names. There are some, though, in the name of the town.
So,
very many.
Whatever our records show for that particular water right is who will get a copy.
So that would mean that would mean that the town has to get the people has to distribute to those people.
To let them know.
But keep in mind, the town will get one book. You're not going to get a book for every water right you have listed in that book.
No, it's just that people want to know. You have to tell people they're in there.
Yeah, and then make a copy of the book.
Yeah.
So.
Gabriel, we have a lot of part.
Sorry, what?
We have a lot of part-time owners who have water rights. Can you explain how we go through the education process and how those people will be able to know that they need to be involved? What level do they need to be involved? Do they actually need to be here to prove up when you're here? What kind of things will go on?
Typically, we don't require the property owner to be present. But if we do have questions once we get here, we'll contact the property owner. And
can you provide an email address ahead of time so that you can be communicated with?
Sure.
I have a mother-in-law in Holland with the Alzheimer's disease. Rather be here, but I have to be there. So.
Yeah.
Maybe a way to do that is when you let Damien know that that lot wants to be perfected or have an election done on it, you could put please contact.
Great.
Yeah, we can do that. We'll try the best we can. Sometimes, communication or coordinating that is a little bit difficult. But yeah, if you let them know, then we'll make sure and contact them.
Yeah. I'm one of the lots in Limbo. Filed an
which
application,
limbo?
But it hasn't been processed. I filed it with the town, and it's one of the town file.
He has a contract.
They've already got a well. They've been using the water since 83.
Okay. Then we'll come out and take a water user claim on you.
They've already done that once.
Okay. If you've already
mapped everything on the lot.
If it's already been done, then they won't. This is for those that don't have an election or proof on it yet that they'll get with the town. Those
but
people.
I don't have any certificate saying I have water.
Well, if they mapped it, you didn't get a water user claim. Or no, it would be in the name of the town. So I'll leave those documents with the town tomorrow that'll show those rights that are perfected under the town's name.
Okay, because that, it hasn't been processed yet, but I submitted it to the town. That's why I say I'm kind of in limbo.
Okay.
Just a very general question to check and see whether I heard something you said to that level. First of all, we've been under the impression that the Castle Valley watershed basin had a special restriction, and if we're listening to you tonight, it sounds like the 6.73 restriction applies to that whole Colorado River basin. And you possibly been talking about basin, you're talking about overallocation of that larger basin, there. Do you have any special restrictions on the Castle Valley Basin in itself, in contrast to the larger basin?
Not as we've discussed here tonight, no.
It is just sometimes in the complexity of the communication, we've got the impression that there are special restrictions in this basin, but it's the overall basin.
And again, there's other issues within the basin, such as surface water filing to treat a little different than groundwater because of the problems of the right structure there.
So there's basically no special restrictions.
I bring up one thing. I've had people call me in Blanding and say, what's your policy? And they say, I own a 20-acre lot instead of a 5. Same policy applies. And it's a 6.73.
And again, we don't have a 6.73 policy throughout the basin. It's one family, 1 acre, 10 head of stock.
Right.
The amount of water you need for irrigation depends on your climate. If you go up by Manila, up by Fleming Gorge, it may only be 3 acre feet is what they need. So it's based on that as well. Okay?
Is there, for the property owners that are not going to develop their lots within the useful time frame that you've been talking about, is there anything that you can say to them? They'll have very reasonable concerns about whether this policy will be continued 10 years from now or something, and you may not be able to answer the very valid and important question.
Yeah, and I don't think we can give them assurances that the question was asked. No, don't file. Wait until you get ready to develop. Will the policy be the same? I don't know. It's hard to predict the future. But again, hopefully we'll develop our entitlement within the Colorado River Basin. Some of those water rights or the checks we've already written won't be cashed. That water will come back into the system. We'll be able to deal with it. I don't know what the future holds.
Are you basically going to continue your policy of extensions where someone does some amount of due diligence and then it's continued on? Again, this is a question that people who are vacillating about developing their lots have asked me.
One of the things that we do not want to promote is someone filing an application and just sitting on it. We expect you, once you file the application, to pursue it to completion. We want to see due diligence in that regard, such as drilling the well, developing the
right,
project.
And that's a normal thing that I've,
yes,
used to be the case. If someone filed the application and invested the money in the well or something like that, and that would be for an extension.
And it may be, yes. We would look at that, and as long as
it's still be this.
Yeah, if it's reasonable diligence in pursuing it, yeah, we'd probably give them another extension. Again, with a small project like this, how long do we let those go on? Is 5 years, 10 years, 15 years enough? Probably if you get beyond that, and then you're really pushing it.
But right now, the cost of drilling the well is actually significant.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Can I just follow up with that? But if I own a lot that I know I'm about to develop now, I probably should not assume that I can get more than 6.7 acre feet for that lot. I probably can't have a strawberry farm.
That's probably a good assumption. And again, all I can tell you with any surety is the policy today is this.
Yeah, I'm saying that, but I'm saying it would be sort of unrealistic for me to think that I could develop a water,
yes,
slide park
Unless we have climate change. There's all kinds of rain and everything else.
So, Jack alluded to it, but we sit on a Property Owners Association Board of Directors. And the way it's worked out is that the town kind of represents the community that's here, and the people out of town who own land who aren't here look at the Property Owners Association as someone that's looking after their interests in the community. So that's one of the reasons why all these people bought land out here, most of them under this guise that the town had water rights, and they had water rights. So they paid a price for land based on those water rights. So Jack and I are, and some other people on the board of directors are based off of POA, have to answer to those people and explain to them what's going on. And we actually have to get kind of maybe not advice, but at least some ideas. And so this puts us in a difficult spot, to say the least. And it sure seems like at the end of the day, if we could come up with an equitable and fair solution, that would include the town of Castle Valley holding enough water rights that it could take care of its future citizens, the lots that are here. Not the lots that are out there that haven't been subdivided or ever developed or anything, because those people did buy land with the assumption, or with, actually it was more than an assumption when they bought their land, that they had water rights. And so, you know, I'm at a loss right now as to what I would even tell those people in a letter or whatever. And it's just as you have to worry about liability and what you say, we also do. But we started this with talking about equitable and fair solution. At the end of the day, I guess an equitable and fair solution to most of us here in this town is having some mechanism to provide those people with water, maybe not 6.73 or whatever, but enough water that they can develop their property and put a house out here. And is there any way we can go about doing that?
Well, again, I think that's very difficult with the current situation we got for Castle Valley Town to actually reserve some water and hold it. The only way you can hold the water and not put it to use, the 50 years that I talked about, is under an approved application to appropriate. If it's a perfected water right, then a municipality is subject to forfeiture just like anybody else. And the legislature knew that when they passed the law. It was their decision that no forfeiture had to be part of that for everybody. But they did allow a municipality the leeway when they got an approved application to appropriate to basically hold it for the reasonable future needs of that community for a 50-year period. But the problem is Castle Valley Town doesn't have that approved application to appropriate.
You just said that you don't want people coming to file rights who aren't going to use them, and that you might give an extension, but I'm sitting here saying that there's nothing else I can say to those people who look to the board of directors of our POA to give them some direction, is go drill a well or go at least make a claim for a right.
And they can do that, but again, I think we're going to say, okay, you need to then develop the water and put it to use. If you just hold on to it, you're going to lose it.
You can't make a claim even though you have to drill the well, and then you would have 3 to 5 years to put the well in.
Make a claim.
Make an application.
Oh, okay. Yes. You then need to make the application, and then again, we grant it for a period of time, 5 years. We would expect something to be done during that period of time.
Like a well building?
Yes, or
jury. Given the experience of the division of water rights, how does the town go about making an approved application, or to get approved application to appropriate? For example, if you went to Spanish Valley, and let's say bought a water right, and that would probably be a perfected right, which would put us, I guess, back in the problem.
No, those are approved.
And so that would build something like that before. Mm-hmm. That's an option that we as a town should.
I think your town has even explored the idea of getting some
plant. Yeah, I've been involved with
that. Yes.
I'm sorry, it's probably a related question. Do you have any understanding of what the Grand County Conservancy, which is holding, you said, a certain amount of water rights, what their official obligation is to us as citizens of Grand County with your with history?
I don't know what that is. Do you pay taxes to the Conservancy District?
Yeah, we do.
Then I think there is some obligation to help
because
you.
Because they are an entity which is holding such rights.
Yes.
Paulette? Paulette, Grace. This is a question that might be related here. I'm just getting a little confused. We have a 5-acre minimum for one family here. A lot of people own more than 5 acres, and I do, and I was just always thinking that it, you know, it's an option for someone else in my family or maybe to sell it for some other reason. But as I'm one family, I've got one will, I've got, you know, working towards proving rights for myself on where my well is on my 5-acre lot. If I sold the other two, I mean, would there be a chance to get water?
I think what we have said here tonight is we are dealing with lots as they exist today. And well, so it would be the one family, 1 acre, and have stock per lot.
But you also said one family. I'm one family with 3 lots.
But if you sold them, you'd have 3 separate ones.
Yeah,
that
you sold them, then they would be 3 separate ones, and we would consider.
Then it would be considered for a new application. It's not like a cutoff date for Castle Valley.
The thing we don't want to do is then see you divide the lot, the 5-acre lot, into 5 additional ones, and then file 4 more.
No, we can't do that for 5-acre minimum.
And so that's why it's based on the lots. Okay, let's finish up here. In conclusion, determine which situation you are in. Remember the 3 situations Teresa took you through? And then get busy. Sometime in 2006, we hope to get out and finish up this part. Book 1, is it? Of Area 05. And so when that is done, then it would be our intent to also withdraw the election order. So if you want to prove up on a water right after that, then you're looking at hiring a proof engineer. Water rights staff will be available tomorrow by appointment. Sounds like they're booked through lunch. But after that, if you need to come in.
I have to go real early. I have to go to work.
That's up to him.
I have to go look.
Yeah, would 5 a.m. be okay?
You'll be in Moab. We'll be in Moab.
I don't care.
Maybe they meet you in the diner. We'll try and work with you. The other thing you could do is perhaps do some of it over the telephone.
I've talked to Rick. I've talked to you already on the phone.
And I think Sharon is on your list for
the additional.
Okay. Then we hope to have some staff out here this summer, as Teresa indicated, to finish up. So as you see, people in water rights trucks, natural resources, know that they're friendly. Don't shoot at us or anything. Okay. Again, in holding this meeting, you would come down here and take some abuse. That's fine. But again, we are where we are. Let's move forward. We're willing to work with you. Yes, we do have some limitations as to how far we can go, but I think we've discussed some reasonable approaches, alternatives here tonight. If there's additional questions or concerns, maybe communicate those to your mayor and your town council. If we need to come back another time, we will. We realize we've thrown a lot of stuff at you tonight. And there's things we haven't even discussed because we don't want to confuse you even more. But if you still have issues, concerns, yes, we can come back and talk to you. Here's the address of the Price office. Give them a call. Stop by as you go through Price. Talk to them. And between Rick and Teresa, I think they can work through your problems. With that, we'll be happy to respond to your questions. We appreciate your time and attendance.
Thank you.
Thank you.